Because we don't have quorum, but we're going to ask Representative Anderson to get started describing his bill, and we can call the meeting to order when we do get quorum. Good morning, Representative Anderson.
We can't miss him.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I didn't know how many would show up today. Well, I'm really proud of those of you that did, and want to thank you.
We'll go ahead and describe your bill, sir, and we can start discussion and maybe testimony as well if you need to, and then we'll call to order when we get enough people here.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. House File 4395 is an attempt to compensate those most impacted by our state's buffer law, and I do have an amendment if you want to talk about that first, but...
Representative Anderson, we'll call the meeting to order. I call this meeting of the House Property Tax and Local Government Finance Division to order. Let's dispense with the minutes. Representative Erickson moves approval of the April 20th, 2018 minutes. Discussion on the minutes as presented.
Think how much more snow there was on the ground back then.
All in favor of approving the snowy minutes? All in favor of the minutes as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The minutes of April 20th are approved. With that, Representative Anderson moves that House File 4395 be laid over for possible inclusion, and then Representative Anderson also moves adoption of the H4395A2 amendment. Discussion on the H4395A2 amendment. Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. And what the amendment does, it omits lines 1.17 and 1.18 from the bill. And one of the difficult things in trying to come up with language here was, when do you start, when do you stop making buffers eligible for this annual state payment? And my first thought was to use just the years where the new buffer law mandated buffers to be installed. But in talking with folks, there's been buffers in place for years in Minnesota, and it was felt that to be more fair, any buffer in place that meets the buffer standard we feel is eligible for this payment, with the caveat that if it's already been paid for by a ditch authority or whatever, they would not be eligible for the payment. So what the amendment does is open it up to pre-2015 buffers if they in fact meet the requirements for a buffer being in place to meet the state's buffer law, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. And Representative Anderson, as we know, many people in Minnesota complied with this law before the extraordinary measures that were placed in law a few years ago. So certainly makes sense to me. Discussion on the amendment, members? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the A2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The A2 is adopted. Representative Anderson, your bill as amended.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair, members, for the hearing this morning. The buffer law passed in 2015, and over the years we've allocated a lot of funding for various agencies, Bowser, SWCDs, things like that, for buffer implementation. And the one thing that has been lacking is compensation for those impacted by having the buffers put on their land, and that would be the landowners or the farmers. And in many cases, they're losing value on those acres put into buffers. And I had a lady write to me a couple of years ago when the buffer law first came out. They had a small farm, 100 and some acres, with a creek meandering through it on both sides. And they were going to lose 10 to 12 acres of productive land. And without compensation, it's extremely difficult for folks to make up for that loss of production on their farms. And what this bill does is make an annual payment of $50 per year. We came up with that to thinking an average kind of at least cover the taxes to be paid on this land. And and this would be an annual payment, not a one-time payment. So this would be ongoing state funding. It is our attempt to give the farmers some compensation for the land they give up. And my thought has always been that if the buffer law and buffer practices are a statewide benefit, then the state should help with the cost and the loss of income to the farmer for giving up those acres for land he puts into buffers, Mr. Chair. And I was a bit surprised by the note that came from the Department of Revenue, although I think they're going to testify maybe in favor, but the number of acres to me is kind of a crapshoot. All along we've been hearing 110,000, 120,000 acres that would be put into buffers, and they came up with about 314,000 acres to be eligible. I'm not sure that I totally agree with that number. I think it's a relatively high, but again, we don't know exactly for sure how many would be eligible, but the numbers that we have used the last couple of years for buffers being installed with the new buffer law was about 110,000, 120,000 acres. So because of that number, the cost of this bill is fairly expensive. In the first year, about $12 million, and then in the ongoing funding, about $15 million to cover the cost to compensate farmers to some degree for their loss of production on the land they give up and put into buffer strips. So with that, Mr. Chair, there are a few folks who would like to testify on the bill, and I'd like to hear from those folks now.
Yeah, let's do that, and then we can take questions and have discussion. Anybody who would like to testify? Mr. Wordish. Welcome to the Property Tax Committee, sir. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Gary Wordish, I'm president of the Minnesota Farmers Union. I'm here today to voice Farmers Union's strong support for HF 4395. Minnesota Farmers Union, we appreciate the work of Representative Anderson and the Minnesota Corn Growers in bringing this legislation forward. Farmers Union, we're a grassroots-based organization. Our policy is based on our input and resolutions that set from our county units who have conventions in the later summer and in early fall to set that policy. Many of you may have attended those meetings. I can tell you that the compensation for buffers has been a top resolution for Farmers Union for the last 2 years. We've heard a lot of it, and many farmers will look to conservation programs like the CRP or the CREP, but many choose not to and feel they should still be compensated for taking their land out of production, but still, they still need to maintain and pay the taxes on it. You know, this, as Representative Anderson said, this would help. You know, it does, there'll still be some opposition, but this is definitely a help to, and it's a state, you know, as we definitely agreed, if the buffer program is a statewide benefit, the state should help in reducing the taxes would be a benefit or would help. So we think that's fair, and thank you for the consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Wordish. Questions for Mr. Wordish? Okay, thank you. Mr. Hetfer? Welcome to the Property Tax Committee, Mr. Hetfer. And first of all, Mr. Hetfer, I'm just wondering, how's mud season going out there? please introduce yourself and then proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kirby Hetfer, and I'm currently the president of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. I farm near DeGraff, Minnesota, and we have not turned a wheel, so maybe next week. On behalf of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4395. One of the top legislative priorities for the Minnesota Corn Growers Association and the tens of thousands of farmers throughout Minnesota is a fundamental principle that farmers should be compensated when government forces change in land that imposes financial implications, similar to how government treats businesses and homeowners. As such, I am here today to voice strong support for House File 4395, Riparian Buffer Property Tax Credit. Among the many reasons why HF 4395 needs to be enacted into law this year, I'm going to highlight three. First, it's basic fairness. Farmers and average Minnesotans understand the long-held principles that if government takes a person's property, there needs to be fair compensation. The buffer legislation passed in 2015 not only failed to provide any compensation to farmers for the cost of creating the buffers, but farmers continue to be taxed each year on those buffered acres. Farmers are very upset about this gross inequity, and House File 4395 at least helps reduce the tax burden on acres that are no longer generating income. Second, farmers are getting into compliance. Despite the fact that state requires buffers but provided no financial assistance to install the buffers, Bowser stated that they believe that 98% of affected farms are now either in compliance or will be soon. Farmers are doing their part during a time of significant economic stress in farm country. It's time for the state to do theirs. The last point I'll make, there's also broad support for a buffer property tax credit. We know from our public opinion polling that 85% of Minnesotans support compensating farmers for the cost of installing buffers or reducing the property taxes on buffer acres. In fact, 36% of Minnesotans strongly support providing compensation, and this support cuts across partisan and geographic lines. People understand basic fairness, which is why this issue is so broadly supported and so important to farmers. In conclusion, Minnesota farmers are watching this issue closely and are counting on legislation to come through this year. On behalf of Minnesota corn growers, we appreciate your consideration and support. We'd be pleased to answer any questions.
Thank you. Members, questions for Mr. Hedfer? Thank you, Mr. Hedfer. Welcome, Ms. Hansen.
Good morning. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Amber Hansen-Glazer, and I am the Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau. Minnesota Farm Bureau supports HF 4395. We appreciate Chair Anderson's leadership and the time this committee has dedicated to helping provide solutions for Minnesota farmers on property tax issues. As we continue to look at what needs to be done to make the buffer law workable for farmers and landowners, property taxes continues to rise to the top. Similar to what Mr. Wordish said about hearing from our farmers during a policy development, this is an issue that continues to be discussed as we talk about what's happened over the last 2 years with buffers. I'd just like to echo the comments that have been made already. And we know that this committee is no stranger to property tax issues in agriculture, and we appreciate the work that you've done and hope that you can continue to help us find solutions. We believe that this bill is a good step towards finding a solution on the treatment of ag land that has been removed from production to install buffers, especially when current programs are not options for farmers and ranchers to find other avenues for compensation. Minnesota Farm Bureau looks forward to working with you on this issue and ask for your support on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Hansen-Glazer? Hearing none, thank you. Mr. Cummings, would you like to testify? Anyone else would like to testify?
Go for a ride.
Good morning, Mr. Cummings. Hang on.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I was able to give Representative Anderson a brief heads up that this was coming. The bill would create a new riparian buffer credit with specific eligibility. The amount of the credit is $50 for acre and is reimbursed to counties in equal installments. The funding comes from the Clean Water Fund as drafted. Governor Dayton would like to thank Representative Anderson and his colleagues coming forward with this tax credit to help alleviate the cost of compliance with riparian buffer requirements. Governor Dayton first proposed a version of this tax credit as part of his 2017 tax bill. This is a sensible bipartisan proposal to support Minnesota farmers who are working to protect clean water throughout our state. Governor Dayton strongly supports this legislation, and he supports it being funded from the general fund, Mr. Chair, and he encourages leaders to send him a bill a clean bill as soon as possible. The governor had a similar proposal, as I mentioned last year, and there may be some helpful updates that can be gleaned from that proposal, if that's helpful, Mr. Chair. There was some thought put into time frames, cost amounts, and funding sources. For instance, the governor's approach from 2007 did use general fund dollars, as I talked about before. This approach in the bill uses resources from the Clean Water Fund. The governor supports general fund dollars as the Clean Water Fund has limited specified purposes under the Constitution. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to come and testify in support of this legislation. We look forward to continuing the conversation with you, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, other members and staff throughout the session on this bill and another bill that would impact Minnesotans, a larger bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So, Mr. Cummings, does the governor not believe that the buffers and the need to pay for them actually supports clean water? Or why does he not support, maybe you can't speak for him, but would he sign the bill if it came from the Clean Water Fund?
Mr. Chair, what I can tell you is that he strongly supports this legislation and that he does support this legislation being paid through the general fund. I know, Mr. Chair, I think one of the important things is that he does want to see this relief be sent to farmers all across the state. And the way in which we can ensure that that happens is that being done through the general fund. Within the Constitution, you know, this is a payment that is intended to provide relief to farmers, but it is not, the sort of the buffer requirements are not tied to this. They're receiving relief for another sort of regulations that would be happening with or without this credit. Instead of trying to tie this to a sort of a long, sort of drawn-out debate that could be litigated in court, the governor does really want to make sure that this relief gets to farmers without any of the possible litigation that could be tied up because of it. So that's why he both strongly supports the bill, and he also supports this coming from the general fund.
Okay, Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Anderson, for bringing this bill forward. Mr. Cummins, we heard Rep. Anderson talk a little bit about the quantifiable acres that would be eligible for this, and although it was perceived that this quantity was smaller, could you share any insights as to how the department quantified these acres?
Mr. Cummins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hertas, this is the first time I've heard of this issue. This is the people who put together revenue estimates try to use assumptions, and I know that they'd be happy to talk to Representative or other. You know, we try and base the assumptions based on what we know under the law, so they'd be happy to share with either their assumption or what the language could be updated to try and get it to the sort of acreage that I think that Representative Anderson was expecting.
Representative Hertas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Cummins, Rep. Anderson, thanks for that information, and I suspect it has something to do with the miles of stream and river and riparian edges to come up with the quantifiable acres. But Representative Anderson, I think the bill doesn't go quite far enough, and let me explain why. You know, prior to 2015, we went through a series of high water years where how you farm your land is oftentimes a management decision. And part of that management decision might be in high water years where the water or the content is coming up from the ground, not on top, that it's flooded. But farmers know sometimes land that has been documented as tillable acres for decades, suddenly you make a management decision that you don't want to get stuck during spring planting. So you stay away, and you give up a little bit of land for that production year. And so I'm thinking of circumstances that I'm aware of that that are not eligible because of a management decision to not farm that land in 2013 or 14. But now that things have started to dry down a little bit, you want to farm that land in 15. But
you're not eligible. So I think I would like to see some additional work on this bill that basically is tied more to those identifiable areas, as Mr. Cummins has testified, the quantities of acres that the department is using is more than double what you have figured in your bill. And I think for those records that are there at FSA and other programs that know the fields and know where the boundaries are and know what has traditionally been tilled, that some of those operators that have acres that should be qualifying for this program not be left high and dry in this circumstance, so or be left underwater, maybe. But you know that I think that's my point. So I would like to see the eligibility expanded preceding 2015 when this became law, because the law was imposed during management decisions where some property owners decided that it was just a little too risky to get too close.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hertaus, I think what you're talking about is what we call prevented plant acres.
Right.
That in a particular year, because of it being too wet, you can't get in there to plant. Well, in my case, I probably try to get a little bit too close, and I do get stuck. But, you know, those, I think, are not a permanent set-aside. They're an intermittent one based on how wet the spring is, how wet the winter and spring is. And I'm not so sure that I would think they would qualify for a buffer payment, because they aren't a permanent type thing, which our buffer law is permanent, where these acres will really never be farmed again as long as we have this buffer law. So in the case of a intermittent non-planting situation, unless I'm not understanding what you're saying, I'm not so sure that would qualify for a buffer payment.
Representative Hertaus.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Rep. Anderson. I think we are misunderstanding each other, because I'm clearly thinking of situations that are along those sensitive environmental areas that clearly the buffer law is intended to protect, and because somebody made a management decision to not farm up to the edges of the field that normally were those circumstances, that those acres should also be eligible too. And if the department, in fact, is quantifying more than double the acres that you were anticipating, I suspect that these acres should be eligible, and I would look towards working with you that not everybody who is an agricultural producer is cut out of this program. It's a matter of fairness. And so I think, you know, some of those management decisions, whether you want to call it preventive planning or not getting stuck, either, however you want to do, I don't think they should get stuck with not being able to take advantage of what you're proposing. So thanks for bringing this forward, and I'd like to talk to you about that.
Mr. Cummins, can you include in the kind of discussion about those acres from the department, the committee, in those discussions, maybe via email or something, as we kind of refine these numbers going forward?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the rural members, you're going to have to tolerate this city girl trying to really understand what we're doing. I didn't see any definition in the law that before us that really tells how you calculate this. So I'm thinking, if you've got a 100-acre farm, and let's say 10 acres on the south side have a river or stream alongside it, so you have to have a buffer there. And let's say that that's a tenth of an acre buffer. So you got a tenth of an acre all along that south side. So collectively, you've got 1 acre of land that's in buffer, that's not plantable. Do you get $50 for that 1 acre that has been taken out of production, or do you get 50 times the 100 acres that is your total farm? How do we calculate this?
I think it's the former, but Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that's a good question. No, it's per acre that's actually put into a buffer. So my example is if you have a quarter section of land, which is a half a mile in length, and if you had a public water running the entire length of that half-mile piece of ground and had that 50-foot buffer on both sides of that public water, you're going to lose about 8 to 9 acres in that half-mile stretch of a quarter section. So in your example, one-tenth of an acre isn't very much, but in most cases, this water would run the entire length of a piece of ground. And when you put the buffer on both sides of that ditch or public water, that's when the acre number gets larger. But it's per acre into buffer, not the size of the field.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's helpful just to understand the terminology. And the other thing I was wondering about is why wouldn't the reduced production value be reflected in the market value? When the assessor goes there, I assume that, you know, if you've got a farm right now that has a natural wetland or it has a stand of old growth forest that you're not planting, that they take that into consideration in terms of the value, probably more the wetland, that they take that into consideration in terms of how much of your property is actually farmable. And wouldn't that, you know, loss of that farming land be reflected by the assessor when they establish the market value for that farm?
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. These are good questions, Representative. They could do that. They could reclassify the land from productive farmland down to wasteland or grassland and lower the value of that acreage. But if that's done, that's a shift in taxes to the rest of the property owners in that county or township. If you lower the value of those buffer acres, those taxes would be made up then by the rest of the taxpayers in the county, and that would be a shift. But it could be done that way, but again, you'd be shifting taxes to the other people in the jurisdiction.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, if we don't do if it seems like both would happen, because if we expect the assessor to reflect the real market value, and so they would adjust for the fact that that is not tillable, usable land, then the farm would be getting the benefit of the reduced value, so reduced tax burden, plus potentially a payment from the state. And so that sounds like they'd actually get two benefits from establishing the buffer. And while it's been argued that this is a clean water is a statewide value and there's a statewide benefit, the major benefit of cleaning the water in that area is for the people who live nearby, who can then, you know, fish in streams that have reestablished their fishing population, or who can, you know, have cleaner water in a variety of different ways that benefits that area. So it feels a little bit to me, and I really want to hear your response about, you know, if they're going to actually be paying lower property taxes because the assessor has to acknowledge that that's not farmable land, and they're getting a dollar value on top of it, that there's some double benefit here, and how do you measure that?
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler. I'm not sure how each individual county would handle this if they would reassess that narrow strip of land along a buffer. That would be up to each county assessor. But on the other hand, I would say usually the land in a buffer strip is your lower land and your best quality land. And if you were going to rent that land out, it would probably be worth, depending on where you are in the state, a couple hundred dollars per acre to rent that land out to somebody else to farm it. So the $50 payment to me is a far cry from what the land would be worth as productive land to be rented out to somebody. And the tax benefit, again, we just use the $50 an acre figure is kind of a ballpark of what the taxes on that land may be. Some areas, if they have a school tax, for example, their tax per acre is higher, and in some places it may be a little bit lower than $50 an acre, but we use that as kind of an average. And I see your point, but it would be up to each individual county if they're going to lower the value of that land, and I can't tell you if they are or if they are not.
Well, Representative Anderson, I think you raise a really good point here. Oftentimes, the land near the river or creek is of higher quality than the other land. And, you know, I think just the basic thought is that, you get closer to the river or creek and it's lower quality land. Oftentimes it's the inverse. So it's really hard to tell. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm also just thinking about precedents, because I think there's a lot of other I can think of urban situations in which government processes make land unusable. I have a lot of Superfund sites in my district where, because of past pollution in the groundwater, it's the same issue in terms of polluted water, remediation systems have to be installed sometimes for many years that you know, distract from using that land from anything else except cleaning up the pollution. And I think we should think about, you know, whether this approach has some longer-term implications that we should think about as well.
Thank you. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Mr. Cummings, if you could come back down.
Okay, Representative Lunan.
Representative Loeffler made a comment earlier that's related to a earlier yet comment you made, that it's been established that the buffer program is a clean water program that benefits the entire state. I think it's almost exactly how you said it. And you had made a comment, or you responded to a question of regarding why this wasn't taken out of the Clean Water Fund. You had said we would like to have it out of the general fund because it would prevent litigation and court cases. Who would you expect would be litigating or taking this to court if we brought it out of the Clean Water Fund?
Mr. Cummings.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm certainly not an expert in terms of the Clean Water Fund. There are specified constitutional purposes for what comes out of the Clean Water Fund, and in terms of directly trying to protect, enhance, and restore water quality. And so I don't know who would be at impact related to that, but we would want to, you know, I can't, as this hearing is happening today, describe, you know, something as constitutional or unconstitutional, but it does, I think it brings up a, I think this discussion brings up a very important point, that if we want to ensure that this tax relief gets to the farmers without any sort of complications, the best way to do that is to provide this relief through the general fund.
I would think, Representative Lunan, maybe the governor's thinking that all of those organizations that were in the legacy bill that were receiving the hundreds of millions of dollars that were funded in there might be suspect. Representative Lunan.
Okay, I'm going to try this again. Do you just, and I don't know, but are you talking about environmental groups that would come in and have a problem with us using the Clean Water Fund?
Mr. Cummings?
Would that be the nature of the group?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would assume that if there is $15 million that is taken out of the Clean Water Fund, that there's $15 million being spent on something less. There isn't a... the Clean Water Fund, for the revenue that's coming in, is being used, right? And if it's being displaced by a buffer tax credit, that there would be other people that would have clean water mitigation efforts that would be less likely to happen. So again, the governor strongly is committed to ensuring that these farmers get this tax relief, and we have to find a way to do that. But he also wants to ensure that we are investing in clean water initiatives all over the state. So providing that relief through the general fund is the best way to do that.
Well, one thing that's clear here, though, Mr. Cummings, I think you'd acknowledge the Clean Water Fund is not a base funding type of situation. It's that decision's made year by year, and it's kind of ad hoc between each legislature as they go forward. So I don't know that we have those long-term commitments in the legacy funds. Mr. Cummings.
And so, Mr. Chair, I think what you'd be saying is that this bill would change that.
It would change a portion of it, Mr. Cummings. Okay. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'm going to take a third run at it. So just a yes or no question. Would environmental groups be opposed to us using the Clean Water Fund to reimburse farmers for buffer strips that are cleaning water up? Yes or no question.
Mr. Cummings.
Well, I will just tell you, Mr. Chair, that and Representative Lunan that I am not an environmental group. I'm Paul Cummings with the Department of Revenue, just a resource. And I'm just telling you that I don't know whether environmental groups would support this being taken out of the Clean Water Fund or not. But what I'm trying to say is that Governor Dayton strongly supports providing this relief to farmers to ensure that this, you know, that farmers who are having to use this have extra expense because of other types of regulations receive some relief. And he believes that the best way in order to ensure that that relief is sustainable is to having come through the general fund.
Thank you.
I don't know what other environmental groups would say. I didn't call other environmental groups before I provided this testimony. I am just trying to ensure that this relief gets out to farmers all across the state, Mr. Chair.
We appreciate your resourcefulness, Mr. Cummings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I only bring that because you were the one that said we should go to the general fund instead of the Clean Water Fund to prevent litigation. Maybe there's some environmental groups here that could come and answer that question, but, I mean, it just seems like a pretty straightforward question. I mean, and I'm just going off of what you had said, and then what Representative Loeffler had said is that it's been established that the buffers is a designed for clean water and it benefits the entire state.
Well,
that's what I heard.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Cummings.
I am not trying to sort of assert what type of litigation and from whom, but I think we do want to ensure that the legislation that we pass does have meets constitutional muster. And while this does provide a payment to taxpayers that that are in some certain set, the regulations that are dealing with buffers are the regulations and are not tied to this. They have to follow the regulations whether they receive this tax credit or not. And so, I think we've had many years in which we have worked, I think, very well with the legislature in trying to craft a solution. The sort of regulations that came about this was done on a bipartisan basis. And again, what we're trying to do here is we're not trying to sort of reinvent the wheel related to the regulations. We're trying to provide some relief to farmers all across the state. And we want to ensure that that happens. And we want to ensure that that happens in a way that is clearly constitutional, that would eliminate any risk that they would receive that payment in the future. And so I hope that our suggestions, and we do have, Mr. Chair, we did put a lot of time in the tax credit that we proposed last year related to this a very similar initiative. And so we hope that, this committee can look at some of the work that we did last year. We'd be happy to collaborate with you, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, if there's some helpful suggestions from last year, because we think we put together a pretty good approach last year. And again, we really thank Representative Anderson for putting together a really great bipartisan approach and strongly support this legislation and think that the best way to do that is through the general fund.
Well, I haven't read that approach, Mr. Cummings, but Representative Anderson has really, I think, got what I've seen as the first proposal coming forward and one that has actually risen to the top here. So I look forward to as we go forward here. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Last question.
3 seconds or less.
Okay. I'm just trying to find out who the boogeyman is that is wanting us to take it out of the general fund instead of the Clean Water Fund. In the conversations that you and the governor's office, whoever has had, has it been discussed that environmental groups would probably be opposed to that move, taking it out of the Clean Water Fund? Yes or no to that?
Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lunan, I guess I want to be clear that the governor strongly supports this buffer tax credit and strongly supports this coming from the general fund. I have had I literally have talked to no environmental organizations about this tax credit. I have just talked to people within the governor's office. I've talked to people from other agencies, but I've talked to no environmental groups. We're just trying to ensure that we've got a good, strong, durable tax credit that can provide relief to Minnesota farmers, and I think we share that goal. And I'm trying to, we're trying to ensure, provide some sort of helpful advice in order to how do we get this tax credit across the finish line. That's what we want to do. We strongly support this legislation and have this come from the general fund.
Well, I look forward to that discussion, Mr. Cummings, and I think probably everyone in this room, or maybe not everyone in this room, but a good number of people in this room would, if the bill does get forward to the governor, to include it coming from the Clean Water Fund the way the author has it. I would suspect in the whole elbowing that goes on for public funds here, and I talked about the legacy bill earlier, that most people here would support us compensating farmers for the unconstitutional taking that we have placed upon them over the specific interests of one environmental group or another. But Representative Lean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was along the lines of some of the comments Representative Hertaus made, and it may be more directed at staff or, I don't know, Mr. Cummings with the department, but just thinking about on line 1.12, if we were to take out is tillable land, that that language, if that would change some of the estimates as far as how many acres would be eligible for this, I don't know if that would take out some of the acres that were more submerged and not tillable, if that's something that would provide more clarity, or at least what Representative Hertaus was thinking.
Mr. Hines, you have any comments on that? Does anybody have any comments on that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would say that I would imagine that if we did take those lines out, that it would possibly open it up to more acreage, because it's a requirement that it be classified prior to conversion. So if you took out that requirement, obviously some additional land would become eligible. How much, I have no idea. I think with regard to what Representative Hertaus was mentioning, I think to the extent that an owner may, or a farmer may choose not to plant the land or to, in any given year, if it's not like a permanent decision, I think it still could be classified as tillable even if it wasn't actually planted that year. But if it's kind of a permanent taking it out, then it probably would no longer be classified as 2A and wouldn't it be eligible, but could be if we took those lines out. But I think, I don't know if that helps.
Representative Lee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I appreciate that. Just kind of something I was thinking about. And then just one comment along the lines of, you know, taking the money from the general fund or the Clean Water Fund. The Clean Water Fund is set to expire, at least the legacy tax is set to expire, 2034. So taking money from the general fund may provide some more long-term stability around this program and helping farmers with the payments. So.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Cummings, if the governor wants to use the general fund, then he wants all taxpayers to have to pay for the staking. Is that correct?
Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, so the general fund is a fund paid from all taxpayers. Having, you know, clean water is a benefit to all people in Minnesota. So this is would be a general fund purpose.
Representative Erickson.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Cummings, but if you consider the cost-benefit of the taking of land and the fact that farmers have across this state done incredible work to provide for cleaner water, I know in my district they have worked so hard with the SWCDs. It's in Kanabec County, for example, it's just incredible what over the years, while I've served Kanabec County, has been done to protect our waters. So it makes sense to me that if this is clean water and farmers, if farm families are paying incredible taxes, that additional tax from the constitutional amendment, that this would make sense at least to take part of it. You know, maybe the compromise could be part of it from the clean water. But that seems to be a legitimate source of payment for the taking of this land and for the incredible work that farmers have already done. Because this is just a pittance of a payment for what they have done over the years to ensure that our waterways are clean, especially in rural Minnesota. So, you know, I hope that you think very carefully about this before we proceed to just take it out of the general fund. because I think in the end we recognize to the public that clean water is important, and farmers have been doing this for years, and now we're going to take a part, at least a part of the clean water to pay for this taking. So that's, Mr. Chair, that's my statement.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson, for bringing this forward. You know, if land is taken through eminent domain, there's, you know, property, you know, the land is compensated, and, you know, if you're looking at $3,000 to $6,000 per acre, this $50 per acre is probably not enough. But I do agree with kind of relating it to property taxes. I know in Clay County, I think it's $40 to $60 an acre in Clay County, so that falls really within the realm of things. When I held town meetings over the Easter break, this was probably the biggest issue I heard was the compensation. And so, I mean, I'd like to say to members, let's make sure we get this done. And this was a proposal from Governor Dayton in 2015. I remember that very vividly, and it kind of got dismissed out of hand. I don't know why, but it was a proposal when it came out. And so I don't care who made the proposal. The fact of the matter is the governor strongly supports it. The legislature strongly supports this. We have to get this done. And I'm just asking leadership here to be flexible on the financing source, because we could get into a bit of a debate on where we could find $15 million a year. And I could think of some spots right in the tax bill we passed that I don't think, and I'm not going to bring it up here, where we could pit farmers versus someone else, and I'm willing to bet farmers would win that battle. But I'm not going to bring that up. So I just don't want something that we're just sticking to our guns here, and then we wind up with nothing. Because you've heard the governor strongly supports this. Representative Anderson strongly supports it. I think Republicans and Democrats strongly support it in the legislature. If we don't get this done, it's our own fault. So I'm just saying, let's not look for the perfect here. Let's get some compromise, whatever that might be. But I want to see this pass. I don't want to see it done over this funding source. I think that would be a disaster if we couldn't. So thank you for bringing this forward, Representative Anderson. I hope we get this done.
Thank you. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just also want to thank Representative Anderson for bringing this forth, and the Department of Revenue for and the governor for supporting it. Representative Erickson's right. Some of our farmers have been the longest-term conservationists we've ever had in this state, and they've been taking care of things for us for a long time. But that same reasoning behind saying we should take it out of the Clean Water Fund is also why we should pay for it out of our state general funds as well. And I'd encourage folks, I just briefly read the Clean Water Fund statute that directs this money. It's 114D.50, and just plain reading of it in our Constitution, there are a lot of bookends about how this money can be used, and I think that's where the governor's strong suggestion to take it out of the general fund comes from. You don't have to kind of guess what conservation groups will do, but actually plain reading of the language, they're supposed to be grants and loans. They're supposed to supplement, not supplant, current funding streams. They have to leverage non-state resources. There's requirements on accountability that if you use these funds that you have to post the Clean Water logo or put it wherever to show that this is where you got the funds from. I don't think we want to have our farmers have to post signs all along their acreage where they've used clean water funds. There's a lot of accountability and transparency and things that have to be data-driven and out there for the public to see. So there's a lot of different parts of the statute and in our Constitution that would directly say we should not be taking it out of the Clean Water Fund. Representative Marquardt and Lean also mentioned, too, this is a fund 2034. It's going to be done. So we have to make sure that we have something sustainable so that folks can have this credit for all the work that they've been doing. So I think we're all in agreement here how important this is to do. We should kind of get past ourselves and get it done and get it out of the general fund. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, have you considered indexing the $50 based on, the property taxes for Class 2A land or something over time into the future? Have you thought about that?
Mr. Chair, no, I have not done that. It would be possible, but I think we've added some things in our property tax bill that have maybe made more work for our assessors, and that would also make their jobs a little bit more difficult, I think, in coming up with a dollar amount. And, yeah, we could do that. And but this, again, I use this figure as kind of a ballpark for what taxes would be statewide average.
Thank you. Other questions, members? Okay, with that, let's wrap it up, Representative Anderson, and I think we got to get to session. Representative Anderson.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair,
members. And again, if you're at a CRP program, you're not eligible for this. If you've already been paid for your buffer, you wouldn't be eligible for this. So I really do question the number of acres, and we need to get that nailed down a little bit better. But I want to thank you all for coming in this morning and for the positive comments and, I think, support for the general idea of the bill. And thank you all, and hope you support the bill. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Members, with that, House File 4395 is laid over, and our meeting is adjourned.